The great Rav of Slutsk from Isser Zalman Meltzer, Rosh Yeshiva later in Yerushalayim in the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, well known for his magnum opus on the Rambam, the Evan HaEzel, was an amazing person, and he was married to an amazing woman. The wife of Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, Bela Hinda, was one of the four daughters of the well-known fur merchant from Kovno, Rav Shraga Feivel Frank, a wealthy individual who passed away at a relatively young age and left four daughters, so each one went on to marry a tremendous gadol b'Torah. At one time, Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer was sitting in his home. It was a cold winter evening. He was sitting and he was learning with someone. And his loving Rebbetzin, Bela Hinda, was in the room next door. And she walked into the room, and she had a cup of hot tea in her hand. And she started to raise the cup of tea to her lips as she was about to take a sip on that cold night. She used to love to stand on the side to listen to the sweet sound of her Rosh Yeshiva husband learning Torah. As she lifted the cup of tea to her lips, all of a sudden the cup slipped out of her hand and fell to the floor and shattered. So Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer looks at his Rebbetzin and he says, "My beloved Rebbetzin," he said, "is it possible today that maybe you encountered an ani, a poor person, and they asked for tzedakah, and maybe you didn't give them?" So she's looking at her husband, who's become a Baal Ruach HaKodesh, and she says, "Actually, yes, I was in Machane Yehud, I was in the marketplace, and this destitute fellow came over to me and asked if I had some money, and I only had a larger sum, and I went to get some change. By the time I turned around, the fellow was gone, and I wasn't able to give this person tzedakah." So she says to her husband, "How did you know?" So Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer said to his Rebbetzin, he said, "Because a glass doesn't shatter for no reason. A glass doesn't slip out of your hand for no reason. I thought to myself, it must have been that you had the chance to do something with your hand today. You had an opportunity, a mitzvah came your way, and you weren't able to do it." Right? That's what happened. She wanted to, very badly. Right? "But a glass doesn't slip out of your hand for no reason. There's a cause, there's an effect, there's a reason why things happen. It's a deep story, and as Jews we believe that there's a reason why things happen. It's one of the principles of our faith. We believe in the power of our actions, we believe in schar and onesh. Again, this was a very innocent mistake, right? But it's not by chance that things happen the way that they happen." And that's one of the big themes in this week's Parsha. One of the major themes that runs through with Parshas Ki Tzeitzei, which is filled with more mitzvot than any other Parsha in Chumash, is that there's a flow. There's a cause and effect. There's an order to the Parsha, which at times seems like a random burst of mitzvot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just sprinkled down into the Torah. It's a theme that Rashi develops throughout the Torah. It's what the Medrash refers to based on the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Mitzvah goreres mitzvah. A positive choice leads to other positive opportunities. And avera goreres avera. So for example, you open up the Parsha, and how does it begin? It begins with the Eishes Yifas Torah. Klal Yisrael go out to war. A person sees this beautiful non-Jewish woman on the battlefield. And then afterwards, the Torah transitions to talk about a man who has two wives, and he loves one of them, and he doesn't love the other one as much. And the one who he doesn't love as much has his firstborn son. And then it talks about the Ben Sora Umora, the rebellious and wayward child, which the Gemara says maybe never even happened, the whole Machlokas. And then it talks about a person who commits a capital crime and how that person has to be held accountable. It's like this random flow of mitzvot, but Chazal said there's nothing random about it. A glass doesn't shatter for no reason. There's a reason why things happen. And therefore Chazal say, and again Rashi brings many pieces of this Medrash in source number one, Medrash Tanchuma, at the very beginning of the Parsha, Shanu Raboseinu, Mitzvah Goreres Mitzvah, Avera Goreres Avera. You have to realize the choices you make matter. We believe in our actions. We believe in the impact of our choices. We believe in Schar and Onesh. These are basic things that Jews believe in. Says the Medrash, our rabbis taught, a mitzvah is Goreres Mitzvah. One mitzvah causes the next mitzvah. And one Avera causes the next Avera. Says the Medrash, Kol Man Dinosiv Yafas Toar, a soldier on the battlefield, who's given permission, by the way, to marry. It's such a strange passage in the Chumash. He's given permission to marry this non-Jewish woman on the battlefield, but realize it's not without consequence. It's mutter. You're allowed to do it. But it's going to have an impact on your life. A person who marries the Yafas Tor, says the Medrash, Nafik Minayu Ben Sora Umora. It's a strange shidduch. You have this Jewish soldier on the battlefield marrying this non-Jewish woman, and it's not so shocking, says Chazal, that their child becomes a wayward child. The child's growing up in a home that's very confusing, gets mixed messages from his parents. And then in Zoru Morik Sivachra, Ve'ish Chait Mishpat Maves Ve'humas, about a capital crime that a person commits, says the Medrash, Im Nitzal Mizo, Lo Nitzal Mizo. If somehow, in that strange mixed marriage, the kid turned out okay, right? But then there's going to be other problems. It doesn't make sense that there's not going to be some type of collateral damage for making the choice to marry the Eish Tifas Tor. L'madnu she'aveira goreres aveira. So Chazal see within this that it's going to lead to a Shalom Bayis problem, first and foremost. Like the Pesukim say, you marry an Eish Tifas Tor, all of a sudden he has a wife who he loves, a wife who he doesn't love, he has a child who's going off the derech. Next thing you know, he's getting involved in all sorts of criminal behavior. Chazal say, aveira goreres aveira. It's not by chance. The choices you make matter a lot. Umitzvah goreres mitzvah minayin. And then you go a little further in the parsha, say Chazal, how do you know that one mitzvah leads to the next? And a beautiful flow of how one mitzvah just slides right into the next. It says, ki kare kanti por lefanecha. Imagine, a fellow's wandering along, a person's wandering along, and encounters a bird nest. Ki kare, you happen upon a bird's nest. Shaleach tishalach asa'im. Send away the mother bird, take the baby birds, l'man yitav loch, v'harach t'yamim, you're given a promise of a long life. A random mitzvah that you stumbled upon, but it's not random. And when you make the choice to follow the Torah, what happens next? Achrav maksiv, kisivna bayis chadash. Hashem rewards this person that they're able to do some construction on their home, they build a beautiful new home. Tizcha livnos bayis chadash. And then what does it say? V'lasos makkah, you make a fence around your roof, that's another mitzvah. Maksiv achrov, kisizra karmacha klein. You start to plant your fields. And you're careful of the halachos of planting a field. Maksiv achrov, be careful with the animals that you're plowing in the field. Don't use a shor and a chamor at the same time. I guess you're doing well that you're able to afford a shor and a chamor. What does it say next? Lo silba shadnis, don't wear shadnis because you're able to buy nice clothing. Tizke lebegadim naim. What's written after that? Then you're able to, if you have nice clothing, you'll be able to mekai in the midst of tzitzis. Maybe we'll even buy some tcheles, who knows? And after that, what does it say? Ki gach yeshisha. Now this guy is an amazing guy. He's got a big business, he's got nice clothing, he's going to get a good shidduch, he's going to marry a woman, he's going to have children, they'll walk in his ways. Hare lamadnu concludes the medrash where it's bolded, she mitzvah goreres mitzvah, va'avera goreres aver. Good choices lead to more good choices, bad choices lead to bad choices. Lefichach nismachu parshios elu zo lizo. And therefore, there's nothing random about parshios kisetzi. Everything flows from one topic into the next with very, very strong connections. But the problem in life is that we sometimes don't see the connections. We're not able to recognize those subtle connections. We don't understand that, how did I get to this place? Oh, right. It was that decision which led to that decision which led to that decision which led to that decision. And that's the avodah of Chodesh El. Chodesh El, part of the cheshbon ha-nefesh that we make in Chodesh El as we get ready for the Yom Noram. It's crazy how soon Rosh Hashanah is. It's a little bit scary to think of that. But Chodesh El is a time where a Jew digs deep and we have to ask ourselves, okay, I know I have averos and I want to fix those averos, but hold on. Let's try to recognize some patterns here. How did I get into this situation? How did I become the type of person who does this avera? Did it start with this avera? Maybe it started with something else. And I start to analyze in a deep way, in a serious way, not just what is the expression of the avera, but what's the root of that avera? Where did it come from? How did it come to be? The Piazetzner Rebbe in his Sav Zeros, which is his spiritual diary, the Piazetzner Rebbe describes two types of doctors. What type of doctor is a good doctor? What type of doctor is a very irresponsible doctor? A good doctor looks at the patient and says, I don't want to just know what you're feeling. I want to be able to identify the illness and heal the illness at its root. A bad doctor says, you have pain, I'm going to give you some good stuff. You'll be able to sleep through the night. That's not going to help me to get better. That's important also. But you're just treating the symptoms, you're not treating the disease. Says the Piazetzner Rebbe, too often in our spiritual life, we're focused on just managing the symptoms instead of treating the illness itself. The Piazetzner Rebbe says, a person who's sick to the stomach, right? It's a little bit of a graphic muscle that he gives in source number two, right? But he says a person who's nauseous and a person who wants to vomit and clenches their teeth to keep the vomit inside, right? That's not going to really help them with their illness. The fact that they're able to control themselves from throwing up. He writes in the third line in source number two, the goal rather is rak tirape gam es hapetza benafshecha. The goal is to heal the wound at its core. And even though he says that sometimes after you heal the wound, a different wound will emerge, okay, that's a different wound. But if I'm just going to manage the symptoms, right, if I'm just going to give myself present myself ki'ilu, I'm doing fine, but I'm not really digging deep and I'm not really fixing the core problem, then it's going to keep coming back. I may be able to control it for a period of time. I may be able to hold myself back from vomiting, he says, when a person is nauseous. But that doesn't mean that I've really dealt with the illness that's affecting my stomach that's making me so sick. There's an amazing insight from the Belzer Rebbe. I know we're very far from Pesach, but you know the Gemara talks about how there's two Rosh Hashanahs. There's the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, there's the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei, a machlokas when the world was created. What's the first Mishnah in Mesechas Pesachim? Mesechas Pesachim begins with the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. The Mishnah says in source number 3, Or la'arba asar bodkim es ha-chametz la'or haner. On the night, on the eve of the 14th, we search for chametz by the light of a candle. That was a very lousy translation, at least according to the Belzer Rebbe. The Belzer Rebbe says, it doesn't say we search for chametz. Rather, it says, bodkim es ha-chametz. We check the chametz. What do you mean we check the chametz? We check for chametz. What does it mean to check the chametz? What does it mean to check the chametz in our life? Explaining the Belzer Rebbe, what it means is that again, it's not just about finding the chametz, it's about identifying how did this chametz get into my life to begin with. If chametz in a Pesach context means the Yetzer Hara, it means Avodah Zarah, it means anything that's foreign to the way a Jewish mind and a Jewish heart should feel. So Or La'arba Asar, as you're preparing for the Yom Tov of Geula, check the chametz, understand the chametz. Where did it come from? How can I get rid of it be'emes? So often a person's not honest about where the chametz came from. Oh, you know, it's my spouse's fault, it's my child's fault, it's my Rebbe's fault, it's my neighbor's fault. Rav Asher Weiss says, you know what we do before Bedikas Chametz? We take 10 pieces of chametz, and we put it out, and then what do? And then we go around and we find the chametz. The same chametz that we put out. Explain to Rav Asher Weiss, that's exactly what it's about. It's not someone else's chametz. You're not searching for someone else's chametz. You're searching for your own chametz that you just put out yourself. You put out the chametz. So bod kenes ha-chametz. So check the chametz. Where did it come from? How did it come to be? I used to never think I would do such a thing. And now all of a sudden, I have all this chametz. Bod kenes ha-chametz. Check, understand the chametz. Understand the root of the chametz. Understand where it came from to be able to make an authentic change in one's life. Elul is just like Bedikas Chametz. It's a time of searching. We're trying to figure out, how did these things come to be? Does anyone know what the word Elul means? What does the word Elul mean? It's the name of the month. It's not of Jewish origin. How many times does the name Elul appear in Tanakh? Anyone know? Zero? Incorrect. Once. In Sefer Nehemiah. You're close. Zero is close to one. In Sefer Nehemiah, in the 6th chapter, it says that they finished building the wall on the 25th of Elul. They were busy building that wall that they were having all the enemies of Klal Yisrael kept knocking down the wall. They're coming back to Eretz Yisrael. They're trying to get things in place for Bayis Sheni. It says one time, it says the word El. We know there's a lot of Ramazim to El. Ani Ledodi Vedodi Li. We spoke about some of them last week. Right? But the word El appears one time. What does the word mean? Does it mean anything? When it describes the spies that were sent, and the Sefer told us Adam, in next week's Parsha, he quotes from Rav Chaim Vital in source number 4, that actually the translation, the Aramaic translation, the Targum, Unkelus's translation of the word for a spy is very much connected to the word for El. Writes the Toldos Adam in Parshas Kisavo, in source number 4, Kamuva mi sefer shal Rav Chaim Vital, the student of the Arizal. Shal kei nikra zeh chodesh Elul. We call this month Elul because Elul is the Aramaic shu lashon miragel, miraglim. Unkelus translates Torim, which means Meraglim, as what? As Elul. K'dematargim al tevas Meraglim, when it talks about Yeshua and Kalev and Midbar Perek Yudalid, it calls them what? Me'alelei. Spies. People who are searching. People who are trying to identify points of entry. Right? To try to find those holes, so to speak. The avod of Elul is to try to identify those holes in our life. The avodah of El is to look deep, is to spy, is to try to figure out, to try to search around. Both can es al-chametz l'oraner. Not just to find the chametz, but where did the chametz come from? Not just to treat the symptoms, but to figure out how am I going to get down to the shoresh? How am I going to fix the problem at its core? There's a theory in criminological theory that says that if you can identify a problem at the beginning of the problem, there's a much better chance that you'll be able to lower crime rates. I'm sure some of us have heard of it before. It's called the broken windows theory. It was made popular by two social scientists in an article in the 1980s. In the 1990s, the police chief of New York and Governor Giuliani at the time, Mayor Giuliani at the time, were very involved in implementing some of these policies. And the theory goes basically like this. The broken windows theory goes like this. When you see a broken window, do something about it now. Because if you leave a broken window, then you give the impression, we don't really care if people break windows. So you know what the vandals do? They break another window. And then they start to take over that abandoned building. And they start selling drugs out of the back of that building. And then people start squatting in that building. And before you know it, the whole neighborhood starts to become a place where crime is tolerated. Or take, for example, in this article it describes, take, for example, the sidewalk that's left with garbage. A little bit of garbage on the sidewalk. What's the big deal, right? But the theory says that if you leave a little bit of garbage, so the next person decides to leave a big bag of garbage. The next person leaves a mattress on the side of the road. And people start dumping, and before you know it, the place is a disaster. It's a mess. And then the rats come and it becomes infested. So the theory says, if you see a broken window, fix it right away. A little graffiti ends up on the side of a building, don't wait. Give the impression that it's not tolerated here. Deal with it immediately. And they found that when they do this, when they actually treat, when they respond immediately to minor crimes, a little vandalism, a little public drunkenness, a person who's not paying their toll on their way onto a train or onto a subway or onto a bus, if you crack down on the little things, it actually totally changes. It totally changes the trajectory of the crime in that neighborhood. You're able to set a tone in that place. And the same thing is true in Ruchnias. If you treat a small problem when it's still a small problem, so it can remain a small problem. But what our Parsha is teaching us, again, in the month of Elul, a month where we're trying to identify where did my averos come from? Not just what they are, but where did they come from? When I identify where it came from and I recognize, hold on, it actually started off as a small thing. And I let it grow and I didn't treat it, I didn't respond to it, I didn't do tshuva right away, I didn't nip it in the bud right away, and now all of a sudden I'm spiraling out of control. I remember a conversation very clearly. I've had this conversation many times with many people, but I remember a very specific conversation with a student of mine, a young married man, and he was telling me about this feeling of disconnect between where he wants to be in his life, and his wife was feeling the same way, where they want to be religiously, and where they are. So this was a person who at one point in his life was davening with a minyan three times a day and learning Torah. And they got married, and his wife was dressing a certain way, and there were certain standards of kashrus in their home, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And slowly, very slowly, as the Yetzer Hara always does, very slowly, it got hard to, you know, to go to Maariv at night. But he still would go to Shachris in the morning. He wouldn't daven Shachris without a minyan. But then Maariv turned into Mincha, and then it turned into Shachris. And then if I'm not such a minyan goer, maybe I'm also not such a learner, and he stopped learning. And then the whole spiritual structure of their home started to change. And then they weren't so careful about this, they weren't so careful about that. And he was saying to the Rebbe, I want to do this, and I want to do that, and I want... So I said to him, listen, let me just explain one thing to you. Your decision to push yourself to go to Maariv right now is not just about whether or not you daven Maariv at the minute. You know the Gemara is as much as I do, Tfilas Arvis Rishus. We can come up with all the rationalization why, you know, Maariv's not a big deal. We can figure it out. We can rationalize everything if we want. I said, you have to understand, the choice to go to Maariv is much bigger than just whether or not I daven Maariv with the minyan. It's whether or not davening becomes a central part of my day, a central part of my home. And what does that mean? What comes along with that? I said, you're seeing what comes along with that. It's not just about Maariv anymore. It's about davening in general. It's impinging on your standards of tznius, your standards of kashrus, your standards of Hilchos Shabbos. It's going to change the way that you educate your children and the types of schools or yeshivas you're going to send them to. So don't just look at it. Don't just view this decision as if this is a question of whether or not I can challenge myself to do a particular mitzvah. Because Chazal tells us mitzvah goreres mitzvah and aver goreres aver. This decision has many, many ramifications that you may realize and many ramifications that you may not realize. So fix that broken window. It might look like a small thing now, but if you don't clean up that sidewalk now, if you don't scrub out that graffiti from the wall right now, so what happens next? What's the next thing going to be? And then you're going to wonder, how did I get involved in these big averos? How did I become this type of person I never thought I would become? It's because you started cutting corners here and there. And again, that's what our parsha is telling us. Parsha's Kitzeisa is the parsha where one thing flows into the next. And maybe that's why it's even called Parsha's Kitzeisa. What's the name of the parsha? Kitzeisa. Kitzeisa means when you go out. When you go out, what? The Pasha Pshat, the Pasuk is talking about a person who goes out to war, goes out to battle. Kitzeisa Melchama. When a Jew goes out to the battlefield. But maybe the name of the parsha is telling us something else. Maybe the name of the parsha is saying that a Jew needs to think, Kitzeisa, what is going to emerge from this? What is this decision going to trigger in my life? Do I realize the ramifications of the choice that I'm making right now? Do I realize that this is altering my entire perspective on how I look at things? That I'm losing my sensitivities to certain things? The Pnei Menachem, the Ger Rebbe, used to speak about a gravitational pull in a spiritual sense. He said, why did God make gravity? Why did Hashem make gravity in the world? Everything in science, everything in nature, everything in the natural, it pulls my feet back to the ground. The Ger Rebbe said, it's not so much about gravity in a sense, which of course allows the solar system to operate in the way that it does, right? But it's a reminder to us that there's a spiritual gravitational pull. There's something tugging at us all the time. There are forces that want to pull us down. And if I'm not going to push back, if I'm not going to find a way to climb up, then I'm going to get pulled down. And again, it's subtle. It happens very, very slowly. Let's look at a pasuk in Parshas Nitzav, source number 5. The pasuk is describing the importance of removing avodah zarah from the land. And the pasuk says, v'tir'u es shikutzeihem, you're going to see shikutzeihem, the abominable avodah zarah of the nations of the land. Ve'es gilulehem, again, another term that describes the avodah zarah as repulsive. Eitz ve'even, avodah zarah made out of wood, avodah zarah made out of stone, kesef ve'zav asher imahem, avodah zarah made out of silver, avodah zarah made out of gold. The Brisker Rav said, no, it's not just describing what the avodah zarah is made out of. The Brisker Rav said, look how a Jew's attitude towards avodah zarah is becoming desensitized. How does the pasuk begin? Vatir'u es shikutzeihem. The first time you saw the avodah zarah, you said, it's repulsive to me. Shikutzeihem. It's disgusting. It's totally foreign to me. Ve'es gilulayam. It's something unrefined to me. But then by the second time, how do you look at it? You're not calling it disgusting anymore. It's not beautiful, but it's not disgusting. It's eitz ve'even. It's kind of neutral. It's wood and stone. And by the third time, what happens as the pasuk kesef v'zav? All of a sudden, it starts to shine a little bit. It starts to become attractive to you. It's exactly what the Gemara says. A person does an avera and repeats the avera. The Gemara says, it becomes mutter. It becomes permitted. The Gemara says, if it becomes permitted, a repeat offender can just get away with it and do any avera you want. No, the Gemara says, it's not that it becomes mutter, but in your mind, nasis lo kehetar. I've spoken to people who are totally disconnected from halachic life, and they told me, they said, Rebbe, the first time I was machal Shabbos, it felt crazy. I felt like a lightning bolt was going to strike me down from the heavens. By the second time, I still felt a little bad. By the third time, it became my new normal. Says the Brisker Rav, the Torah is warning us, be careful. Vatir'u es shikutzeihem, just by seeing the avodah zarah. And even though you saw it the first time, you said, I would never do that. But you saw that someone's doing it. By the second time, it's a little bit neutral. By the third time already, it's attractive to you. A person has to be mindful of the fact that things change very, very quickly. So when it comes to uprooting avodah zarah, what does the Torah tell us? Abei ta'abdun, a double lashon. Abei ta'abdun, destroy it completely. Says the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah and Daf Mem Hei Amud Aleph, Ha'oker Avodas Kochavim. When a person uproots Avodah Zarah, one of the areas of Avodah Zarah that it talks about in the Masechet and Pesukim and Chumash also, it talks about an Asherah tree. If you have an Avodah Zarah tree growing in your field, it's not just enough to chop down the tree. That's what the Pius Ester Rebbe called being a bad doctor. That's called treating the symptom. That's just treating it on the surface. What about getting down to the real core of the problem? Say Chazal, a very deep idea. Rashi quotes it in Parshas Re'eh. Ha'oker avodas kochavim. A person who uproots avodah zarah, tzarech l'sharesh achara. You need to get down to the shorash. You need to get into the roots. You need to understand where it's coming from, where it's sprouting from. What do we do to dig up the avodah zarah in our life this time of the year? Again, Chodesh El is a time where we become spies. We're trying to get in deep. We're trying to understand behind the scenes, how did it come to be? What tool do we use to dig the Avodah Zarah out of our life this time of the year. To uproot that Yetzirah in a deep way. Not just to do a little surface cleaning, but to really find the root of how I made these mistakes over the course of Tafshin Ayin Tes, and to uproot them at their core to never make those mistakes again. What tool do we use? What shovel do we use? What digging tool do we use to get it out? And the answer is, it's called the shofar. It's an unusual tool to dig in your fields with. Right? But if ki adam eitz asad, if a person's like a tree, and we're trying to uproot any unnatural growth, the tool that we use to dig deep during these days is the shofar. The shofar is supposed to transport us to a different place. When you hear the shofar, it's supposed to penetrate the depths of a person's being, down to the core, not just to shake you a little bit on the surface, but the shofar digs deep inside of a person, and it uproots the Avodah Zarah that's hidden beneath the surface. What's the very next pasuk after this pasuk? Vatiras shukutzeim, you see the Avodah Zarah, and it's repulsive, and then the Briskerov says it's Eitz Ve'Evin, and then before you know it, you're attracted to it, it's Kesef Azav. The Torah says, be careful, there's Avodah Zarah hiding in places. You may not even realize. Says the pasuk in source number 8, Pan yesh bachem ish o isha o mishpacha o sheva. Be careful. There are people who are destructive to you. It could be a man or a woman. It could be a family. It could be an entire tribe. Asher levavo pona hayom meyim Hashem Elokeinu. Where their heart is beginning to turn away. They're starting to move away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lelechas lavod es Elohei HaGoyim Ahim. They're starting to make a move towards Avodah Zarah. It's that first move. Says the pasuk, Pan yesh bachem, perhaps there is amongst you, hard words to translate, shoresh pore rosh vila'ana. Perhaps there's a shoresh pore, a flourishing root of rosh vila'ana, of gall and wormwood, of bitter plants. Perhaps there's something that's starting to sprout. Be on the lookout. It could be an individual, it could be a family, it could be an entire tzibor that's dragging you down. Be careful. When you see people starting to turn, ask yourself, wonder about it. Pen yesh bachem, maybe there is amongst me a shoresh pora, a root somewhere beneath the surface that's starting to emerge. And if I don't fulfill, like that Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, to dig out the roots, before you know it, the whole field is going to be overgrown. Says the Imrei Emes, in the name of the Chiddush Arim, the first Ge'er Rebbe, shoresh pora rosh vila'ana is Rosh Tevos shofar. How do we respond to that root that's starting to grow? How do I get down to my core, to my kishkas? When a Jew hears the shofar, whether it's Elul, whether it's Rosh Hashanah, you have to close your eyes and you got to listen in a deep, deep way to the shofar. You got to let the shofar hit home. The shofar is not just Hashem saying, you need to do tshuva. Okay, I'm going to fix things up. The shofar is that medicine that's penetrating down to the core to really treat the illness. Not just the symptoms on the surface, not how it's expressing itself or presenting itself. Shoresh pore rosh vila'ana is Rosh Tevos shofar. The shofar helps us to identify where's the root. Where's the root of the problem? If a person listens deeply to the shofar, that's the feeling that a person's supposed to have. A person has to be a person of foresight. You have to be the type of person who's wondering, right, what is this going to lead to? Ezeu chacham haroes hanolad, Chazal say. Who is a person who's truly wise? A person who asks oneself, what is this going to lead to? Roa es hanolad. See what's going to happen next. The tragedy of not realizing what something leads to is a terrible tragedy. There's a mashal that's brought by the Gaonim, explaining the pasuk in Yirmiyah. The pasuk in Yirmiyah says, Bayamim ahem lo yomru od avos achlu bosar. The parents ate sour grapes. Unripe grapes, both are unripe grapes. Vishine bonim tikhena. And the children's teeth, right, like hake yashinov, were set on edge. The parents ate the sour grapes, but the children felt it in their teeth. In the Tshuvas HaGaonim, in a small little volume called Shari Tshuva, there's a Tshuva from Rav HaGaon who says, there's hundreds of mashalim on this pasuk, and he says, I'll give you one. And he tells the mashal, it sounds like an Aesop's fable. It's found in the writings of the Gaonim. There was a lion who came to a fox one time and wanted to devour the fox. And the fox said, why are you wasting your time with me? I'm a small little fox. I'll get you a good meal. If you partner with me, I'll get you a good meal. He says, come, I'll show you. I'll show you a human being, a large fellow. You'll get yourself a really good meal. Okay, so the lion says, all right. As long as this works out, I'll leave you alone. He says, I'll take care of you, I'll get you a good meal. You don't harm me, I'll find you a really nice sized steak for you to enjoy. So the lion follows the fox, and he leads him through the brush, and he shows him there's a hunter. He points out, see, the hunter's sitting over there. So the lion creeps a little bit forward, All of a sudden, the lion springs from its place to charge at the hunter. And the lion's sitting there in this ditch, and the fox comes over to the edge of the ditch, and then the fox is laughing. The fox is laughing at him. So the lion says to him, what did you do to me? So the fox says, let me remind you what our conversation actually was. What was our conversation? I told you I'm going to get you this man to eat. And you said that's fine. So then you said to me, wait a minute, but there is one little problem, because the truth is, if I eat the hunter, if I eat this guy, well, maybe his children are going to come after me. So the fox said to the lion, don't worry. It's not the hunter's going to come after your descendants somewhere down the line. You don't have to worry about it. This guy, you're going to eat this guy. He's not going to get you. Maybe in a few generations from now, they're going to start to catch on, and they're not going to like lions. They're going to try to harm lions. So he says, I don't understand. How did this guy catch me? How did he know I was going to try to eat him? So the fox says to the lion, because your parents said the exact same thing. The earlier generations made the exact same calculation. Right? They said, well, we're going to eat the hunters, and then, we're going to eat the human beings, and then, all right, whatever, they'll go after our kids, that won't be my problem. Right? But your ancestors said the same thing about you, so now you fell into the trap. Explains the Gaon, and that's the pshat in this pasuk. Avos achlu bosar. The parents ate the unripe grapes, v'shinei banim tikana, and the effect was felt by the children. They didn't realize that sometimes the choices that we made now are going to affect our children. And if I become a person who thinks like that, well, guess what? Then that's going to, maybe I'm the recipient of someone who thought that way about me. A person has to understand, what does this lead to? How is this going to shape my family? Is this a big deal or is this not a big deal? I'll tell you a great little maisa in a positive sense about a person who planned ahead and was very helpful and was very creative. I saw this in a Hebrew biography of Rabbi Akiva Eger, the great Gaon Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger's son, Rav Shlomo Eger, had a father-in-law who passed away, and he left as part of the Yerusha. He said, whoever has a child and names the child after me, after the father-in-law, is going to be given 40,000 ruble, an exorbitant sum. So Rav Shlomo Eger and his wife had a baby boy. They named the child after the father-in-law, after her father. But unfortunately, the child passed away after a short period of time. Then a brother-in-law and his wife had a baby boy. They also named the child after the father-in-law, and that baby went on to live and carry the name. So there's a whole question, who gets the money? Rav Shlomo Eger said, well, I was the first one to name after the father-in-law, so I should get the money. The brother-in-law said, but unfortunately, your child doesn't carry the name. Your child passed away very shortly after the child was given the name. So they came to the Chemda Shlomo, who was the head of the Beis Din in Warsaw, and they wanted to hear his psak. So he said, I need 30 days to think about it. I need a little time to process this, Shiloh. Rav Shlomo Eger said, I deserve the money. I was the first one to name after my father-in-law. The Chemda Shlomo, he says, I need to think about it. Give me 30 days to think about it. After 30 days, Rav Shlomo Eger comes back to the Chemda Shlomo in his Beis Din, and he says, what's the psak? I get the money? He said, no, I'm paskening against you. Your brother-in-law gets the money. So Rav Shlomo Eger says, hold on a second. Whatever the cheshbon was, whatever the calculation was in halacha. So he says, okay, obviously I'll respect your psak, but, my father's Rabbi Akiva Eger. You should probably consult my father. You should make sure that that your psak makes sense. Rabbi Akiva Eger is the God of Lador. You should probably speak to my father about this. So the Chemda Shlomo, says, let me tell you a story. He says, the Rebbe Rav Heschel of Krakow, who was the Rebbe of the Shach, was known to be a super genius, and a very creative person. We have a couple of his svarim, very, very creative svarim. When the Rebbe of Heschel, this is what says the Chemda Shlomo, or Shlomo Eger, he says, when the Rebbe of Heschel was a little boy, one year on Pesach, he stole the Afikoman. He stole his father's Afikoman. And his father said, I want the Afikoman back. He said, I'm only giving you back the Afikoman if you buy me this fancy silk garment that he really wanted, as a young boy. His father said, it's very expensive. You want the Afikoman or not? He said, I'm only giving it back if you give me the silken shirt. So he says, okay, I'll buy you the silk shirt. Okay. So the Rebbe of Heschel, he gives back the Afikoman. His father starts giving out Afikoman to everyone at the table, and he skips over little, as a young boy, skips out the little Reb Heschel. So he says, Tati, where's my afikomen? I also need to eat afikomen. I also have to fulfill that step of the Seder. So he said, well, now I've got the afikomen, and I'm only giving you a piece of afikomen if you free me from that obligation that I made to buy you the fancy shirt. The Rebbe of Heschel, everything he was as an adult, he already was in microcosm as a child. So he says, Tati, I knew you were going to do that, and I saved myself a little piece of afikomen. So the Chanda Shlomo says to Shlomo Eger, he says, you want to know what your father says about this? He reaches into his pocket. He pulls out a tshuva from Rabbi Akiva Eger. He says, your father agrees with me. That's why I asked you for 30 days. I knew you were going to come and ask me, what am I going to come after? If I pass it against you, you're going to say, oh, but did you ask my father? I said, I spoke to your father already beforehand. Ezul Chachma Roas Anov. The Chachma, why are we smiling? Why are we all laughing? Right? Besides it being a cute story, we see there's a certain sweetness to a person who thinks ahead. To a person who understands, right, what might happen and what could happen and plans accordingly. Let's end on the positive side of this whole equation. We spoke about how, again, a mitzvah gereres mitzvah, but we spoke a lot about uprooting that aveira, how aveira gereres aveira. Let's talk about how a positive action sometimes will cause something that you don't even realize in a million years would ever cause. How a mitzvah gereres mitzvah in a way you never could have imagined. Says the Rambam in source number 11, the final source. The Rambam writes, the shofar, of course, comes to wake us up, to do a cheshbon nefesh, to dig deep, chipsu b'maaseichem, return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, realize that maybe you're going through life without even being connected to Hashem. The Rambam uses very strong lashonos. And then the Rambam says, where it's bolded, lefichach, therefore, tzarich kol adam shiira atzmo kol hashana kula, ki ilo chetzio zakai v'chetzio chayiv. A person should see himself or herself the entire year as if I'm 50-50. And I should see myself, and I see the world, Kena Olam. I should see the whole world as Chetzio Zakai v'Chetzio Chayiv, as 50% innocent, 50% guilty. And I should consider the following. Now, it's very hard to buy into this Rambam, but it's true, and we have to live it. A person has to believe that Chata Chet Echad, if I do a single Aveira, I could tip the scales for myself and for the entire universe. My next move might be the start of what? Of changing the whole course of history. One aveira, harei achriya satzo es kol ha'olam kulo l'kaf chova. I could tip the scales against humanity. V'garv lo hashchos and destroy the world. Asa mitzvah achas, if I do one good deed, harei achriya satzo es kol ha'olam kulo l'kaf chos. It may be the beginning for us, how this leads to this and this leads to that, and sometimes we don't know it. Imagine the shock. My Talmud from YU, my Sholom Meshav of our shir this year, Elliot Fuchs, lives in the Five Towns. Imagine the shock he got when he walked into shul this past Shabbos, at the end of Shabbos, and someone comes over to him and says, did you see it? I don't know what you're talking about. You didn't see it? I still don't know what you're talking about. And he pulls out Ami magazine. And he starts to show him this article printed in Ami magazine by a yid named Shmelka Diamond. Okay? Listen to a couple lines from this article. He starts off by talking about the mitzvah of tefillin, how important tefillin is, the Shmelka Diamond. He says, 8 years ago in the summer of 2011, I found myself spending 3 glorious weeks at the Julian Krinsky Summer College Program, a well-known program for teenagers, a basketball camp. One feature of the affiliated camp was called Yesh Shabbat, which was designed to cater to Orthodox Jews and offered kosher dining facilities and Shabbos activities. Okay. And this fellow goes on to describe how he was not religious at the time. He was not observant. He was in this camp. And there was a portion of the camp that was from kids, so they had this Shabbos program as part of this Julian Krinsky basketball camp. And he writes, of all the boys, though, there was one with whom I really connected. Elliot Fuchs, barely 13 years old, from a well-heeled Five Towns background and currently attending Hafter, the Hebrew Academy of the Five Towns in Rockaway. Despite the 3-year age difference, so this fellow was a 16-year-old public school kid, Shmelka Diamond, formerly Spencer Diamond, before he became a chassid. We shared a bond over my interest in what he only knew as normal and spent hours talking about what Yiddishkeit meant to us, as well as just schmoozing as friends. I will never forget how startled everyone was when I walked back into my dorm with a keep on my head that Friday night. Everyone wondered how my evening had been. Some even greeted me with good Shabbos. This was a kid who had never kept Shabbos before. And he met a 13-year-old kid from the Five Towns who was friendly to him. The Monday after that special Friday night, I decided to wake up earlier than usual, having coordinated with Elliot that I would try out a Shacharis minyan. Not knowing what to expect, so I was greeted by those curious black boxes and lots of Hebrew. Maybe it was the lack of caffeine at that early hour, but I was overwhelmed. Had I gone too far, bitten off more than what made sense for me? Then Elliot suddenly appeared with a group of friends and gave me a big hello. My discomfort began to melt away as I realized how right I was to show up. But how, I asked him, would I daven without tefillin? He said it was at that moment when Elliot immediately removed his own tefillin to help me put them on. I asked him how he could trust me with such a precious item. Then this modern Orthodox boy, this 13-year-old modern Orthodox boy, somebody who was a world away from me then and in many ways quite different from me now, the Satmar Chassid now, Shmelka Diamond, smiled and said, we are all brothers. This is an amazing thing. He was my brother and it was my Yiddishkeit. Everything just started to make sense. And just like that, I was part of the minyan, embracing my new tradition and eagerly awaiting the next morning. Thankfully, this wasn't a one-time experience. For my 17th birthday, 3 months later, I asked my parents for my own pair of tefillin. Many years have passed since then, but the tefillin have thankfully remained a constant. After that summer, Elliot and I remained in contact for about a year, with him guiding me through some questions I had about Orthodox practice, but after that, we just kind of lost touch. In recent times, I've occasionally found myself in the Five Towns walking down Central Avenue and wondered what would happen if I met him. I learned a very valuable lesson from this young boy, which was the importance of greeting every person cheerfully, as it says in the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. I also learned to never give up on a Yiddish neshama, because you might just be the person who ignites a fire in him. If a 13-year-old modern Orthodox boy from Long Island can make such an impact, imagine what we adults can accomplish. I can assure you that whatever we do will leave its mark. I still owe Mr. Fuchs a tremendous debt of gratitude wherever he is. So in the absence of a phone number, thanks, Elliot. Can you imagine? It was a cover story. It was in the corner of the cover. Jamie, you heard this yet? Did Elliot tell you? In his humility, he didn't want to share it. I'll put it in the Shir WhatsApp group later. It's unbelievable. Can you imagine? As a 13-year-old kid, one time he was nice to some kid and he lent him his tefillin. Elliot told me he sat this past Shabbos with his family crying over the fact that they realized that it's not just that Spencer Diamond became frum, it's that Spencer Diamond is married to a frum woman, he just got engaged a little while ago, and Mirza Shem will have frum kids and I'll raise a frum family, and Lidore Doros, every mitzvah that'll ever be done starts with that one mitzvah of being nice to someone else. Mitzvah Goreres Mitzvah. Says the Rambam, you have no idea what your next mitzvah could do. It could change your life forever. It could change the world forever. Sometimes you know it and sometimes you don't. Chodesh Elul says, dig deep. When it comes to the Averos, try to understand, where did they come from? How did they evolve? How did they progress? Ezu Chacham Aroas HaNolad. Realize this is going to lead to that. In a positive sense or, God forbid, in the negative sense. And how does our Parsha end? And with this I conclude. How does our Parsha end? Our Parsha ends with Parsha Zachor. Remember what Amalek did to you. Asher karcha baderech. Remember how Amalek met you on the road and said, karcha, everything is mikra. Life is happenstance. It's so interesting that a Parsha, where everything looks kind of mikra, everything looks kind of random, right? At the end of the Parsha, we encounter Amalek, the one who says, yeah, life is kind of random. Don't read into it so much. And our response to Amalek is the entire Parsha's Ki Teitzei. Ki Teitzei, what comes out? What is this going to lead to? Pay attention to it. Let's notice it. Let's think about, what is this choice going to lead to in a positive sense? What is this choice, God forbid, going to lead to in a negative sense? Let's be people who are what? Elul. People who are spying out. Who are bodkin es hachametz. Who look deep into the chametz that we do. And again, to remember as we started what Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltzer told his Rebbetzin. Be'lehinda, a glass doesn't shatter for no reason. It's a Kodesh Baruch who's saying to you, you didn't use your hand exactly right today, use your hand in a better way tomorrow. So Mirtz Hashem, we should be thoughtful. We should be sensitive Jews. We should notice what we're doing. We should own up to our mistakes. And Mirtz Hashem, will be able to truly change ourselves for the better. Shabbos.